roughly 600 years before the birth of Jesus, the prophet Jeremiah was given a message by God that he was to proclaim to the Jewish people, his fellow Jews. And it was a rather stern and severe message from God. Jeremiah didn't ask for this responsibility, and he didn't particularly want it. But nonetheless, he was obedient, accepting God's will for him. And if you know anything about Jeremiah, and certainly the reading today we heard gives some insight to it, he suffered greatly for being God's mouthpiece. He received death threats and was punished publicly. And at some point, as we all, I suspect, might, moments where you just say, I can't do it anymore, even if you find energy to continue on later. But at some point, again, as we hear in today's reading, having had enough, he said, I will not mention him, that is God. I will speak his name no more. I'm convinced that if we are truly open to God's will for us, his call, in whatever ways we then begin to carry it out, it will bring causes for fear, rejection, and hardship. And Jesus makes it pretty clear today. Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And even as we say that, we know that the call of Christ comes with something beyond those hardships and fears, that it leads to something good that is enduring, meaningful, and certainly the source of happiness. We realize that even as we fear it. Bearing all that in mind, I found myself considering the saint who we celebrate really tomorrow on the calendar, September 3rd. We commonly know him as Gregory the Great. He came of age about 100 years after the fall of Rome, the once lustrous city, well, no more. He was born specifically in the year 540 into a family of wealth and access to things, and he was educated as a result, and he developed an aptitude for administration and kind of a good business sense. And so he followed in his footsteps, his father being kind of a high-ranking government official, so was Gregory, who served as a prefect, kind of a city official for the city of Rome. Well, about this same time, there was a religious movement that was taking hold, emerging in the immediate area, started by a man named Benedict. And this movement was sort of rooted in a body of rules that served as a structure for a life that would be centered around prayer, solitude, and intentional community life, what we would commonly call monasticism. And so, this way of Benedict, if you want to call it that, in contrast to the chaos and noise of the world, including, of course, in Rome, it attracted many, including Gregory himself. And so when Gregory's father died, he converted the family home into a monastery. He gave it to the Benedictines. And he resigned from his work of public service and himself became a monk. And he would later go on to describe that the next 15 years living as a monk were the happiest segment of his whole life. And yet, because of his capacities, his education, his administrative capacities, he would eventually be called upon, more than he ever would have wanted, to carry out important responsibilities, including being at one point appointed abbot for the community, abbot being father. Now, if you recall, as I said a moment ago, Jeremiah was called to this prophetic office about 600 years before the birth of Jesus. It was about 600 years after the birth of Jesus that Gregory was called to the office of Peter, that is, to be Pope. And having been elected, he didn't want it, he wasn't expecting it, and frankly, he was mortified. Though obedient and accepting the election, he grieved, longing for the peace and solitude that he had had for those previous 15 years in monastic life, saying, "Now, by reason of this new pastoral care, I sigh as one who looks back, gazing upon the shore that I left behind." And so from that point forward, the remaining 14 years of his life, Gregory proved to be, well, even if he didn't want to be, a wonderful pope. He balanced his administrative insights with being a wonderful spiritual leader. There's more than I can begin to say about him. But in addition to bringing about much-needed reform within the church, he was well known for his attention and care for those in crisis, whether it was refugees who were fleeing persecution coming to Rome, whether it was the sick and dying in times and waves of plague or famine. In fact, he saved the very table from his family home to be used by the poor whom he would invite and have meal with them. In his own way, like Jeremiah, who suffered greatly for simply doing what God was calling him to, so did Gregory. I love the humility of what he describes. He says, "When I was in the monastery, I could curb my idle talk and usually be absorbed in my prayers. But now that I have taken on the burden of pastoral care, my mind is no longer collected. It's concerned with so many other matters. I'm forced to consider the affairs of the church and of the monasteries. I must weigh the lives and acts of individuals. I'm responsible for the concerns of our citizens. I must worry about the invasions of roving bands of barbarians and beware of wolves who lie in wait for my flock. I must put up with certain robbers without losing patience. And at times I must deal with them in all charity. With my mind divided and torn to pieces by so many problems, how can I meditate or preach wholeheartedly without neglecting this office? I must often communicate with worldly men. At times I let my tongue run, for if I'm always severe in my judgments, the worldly will avoid me. And as a result, I often listen patiently to chatter because I am too weak, I find myself drawn little by little into idle conversation and begin to talk freely about matters which once I would have avoided. So who am I to be shepherd of this church? For I do not stand on the mountain, but instead lie down in the valley of weakness." I can imagine, so many of us in this room can relate to this humble confession. Maybe in your lives as spouses, parents, employees, being drawn into caring for others and so many matters which maybe would not be what you would prefer. Well, in addition to all those responsibilities, our Lord Jesus places responsibility on us. Like Jeremiah, like Gregory, are you willing to listen, first of all, to how God would call you? And would you be open to it, realizing that it may not be what you want to hear? Do you trust enough to deny yourself for Jesus, to indeed, as he says, take up your cross and follow, believing, or rather, I guess I should ask, do you believe that therefore that somehow it saves your life, or is that just a phrase? Furthermore, do you believe that somehow those entrusted to you are being saved by your response? I'll close by a thought I have. You know, sometimes I get people who are fairly advanced in the spiritual life, in the confessional. And they live kind of a penitential or a confessional life. And they look over these pamphlets like we have, which I think can be really helpful for most of us. Me too. We call them, of course, examination of conscience. It's kind of a laundry list of common sins. Not exhaustive. Most people find them helpful, as I said. But sometimes I get those people I described, who they look over this. It's like, you know what, I don't think there's anything on here. I know I'm not perfect. I know I'm still a sinner. But I'm not finding anything on this sheet that's helpful. And I think they say it in sincerity rather than really not being honest with themselves. So the question I reduce it to for them, and it's actually two questions, but they are two sides of the same coin. And it takes time to pray over these two questions to come up with the answers. But in this lies where I'm sinning. And so the first of these two questions is, where is God calling me forward when I am being honest and examining the question? And yet, because of fear, lack of trust, I can't leave behind what needs to be left behind in order to move forward, knowing that if somehow I did, it would move me closer to him, but I can't do it. I believe that regardless of whether you are still in, I don't know, childhood development of your spiritual life or whether you have grown to be kind of a giant, there's an answer to that question for you, as there is for me. And by the way, for me, it would be more than one thing. But at least identify the one. And the flip side of that coin is, what is it God is calling me to stop doing, to leave behind and walk away from it? Knowing that if I did, it would free me up to where I can move closer to him. And yet, fear has me clinging to it. Do you trust that if you respond to this call, in some ways take up your cross, do you believe that it actually leads to him and will help save you and those God entrusts to you?